light. Okay, red light.
When I pull my glasses down this far, you can't talk very good.
Okay, John came to 12. Supposed to be serious in the house of God. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, thank you for your words. And Lord, I do ask you to help us to be faithful to your words. I ask that you'd help us concentrate on your words, understand them, know a little bit more about your nature, your personality, your character, which is rather unusual in some ways. And Lord, I do pray you'd help us to honor you and see what you're like. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, John 12. 12 and following is 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, even 17, is all about the Palm Sunday. Okay, Palm Sunday, I think we've covered that. Verse 18, for this cause the people also met him, for that they heard that he had done this miracle. Okay, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, therefore said among themselves, perceive ye how ye prevail nothing, behold, the world has gone after him. Now, in John chapter 2, why did the world go after him? It's because they saw his miracles. And the Jews will be rejecting him officially. They have already rejected him officially, Matthew 12. And so the Pharisees are trying to defeat Jesus. And they're saying among themselves in verse 19, man, we're not prevailing. We're not getting anywhere. Everybody is listening to him. Okay, and often the case is... when you get tyrants or somebody like the Pharisees or a tyrant like the guy in North Korea or Castro down in Cuba and the Chinese in the past, their mindset is they want to control people. They want people who's going to do what they say. And Christians they have in their mindset are not going to listen to them. Christians have a different Lord. And so they got to get rid of Christians, and their mindset is that the way to get rid of Christians is to kill them. Yes, you get rid of a Christian that way, but persecution has been the lifeblood of Christianity. And so when they persecute and kill an innocent party, people that witness that will say in their spirit, boy, I wish I had that kind of courage. Boy, they got something not only worth living for, they got something worth dying for. What do I got? Man, I came from a frog, and I'm just obeying this bigger frog, you know, this tyrant, and I've got nothing to live for. That person was willing to die for something they believed. And Christianity in North Korea is growing like crazy, but yet they're killing them like crazy. So Constantine was a guy that probably recognized that. If you know anything about church history, after the apostles got things going and God used the apostles to really turn over the known world there, and then the apostle Paul, the political leaders, they thought, man, we got to stamp this out, we got to stamp this out, we got to kill them, we got to get rid of them, and that of course made them grow more. So Constantine tried a different method. He realized that antagonism wasn't working, so he tried alliance. Oh, I'm one of you. I'm like you. And Constantine probably became the first official pope of the Catholic Church. I know they're going to try to trace it back to Jesus, but anybody that's got any sense can read that and see that that's not true. So Constantine had a bunch of Bibles published. Of course, they were Vaticanus manuscripts. And that actually fooled a lot of people. Okay, so it's a lot of times like a politician, was it Jimmy Carter, said that he was a born-again Christian, you know, and probably got elected because of a bunch of dumb Southern Baptists thought that that was true. Okay, and because Jimmy was a Southern Baptist. So, here they realize, they recognize they are not prevailing against Jesus Christ. The world has gone after him, but the problem is, why is the world gone after him? Why are the masses gone after him? According to John chapter 2, they've gone after him simply because they saw the miracles, and they felt that if we could get him to perform a miracle, it would make our life more convenient. Now, because of that, Jesus Christ would do things that seem quite contrary to the normal pattern of people. Verse 20 shows something like that. And there were certain Greeks, okay, Greeks, Gentiles, among them that came up to worship at the feast. The same came, therefore, to Philip, which was of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, Sir, we would see Jesus. Now, if somebody walked up to you and said, we would see Jesus, I want to see Jesus, I would say, all of us are going to quick jump on that. Man, we're going to glad to show you that. But Jesus Christ seems to do the opposite. And there's times where one guy came up to Jesus, so I want to follow you. And then if somebody says to the average preacher, I want to follow you, they say, well, okay, here's what you got to do. Just jump in line. But with Jesus Christ, he did the opposite. He said, oh, you want to follow me? Oh, foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but I don't got a place to rest my head. You want to follow me? I mean, he was like discouraging people to follow him. In this case, it was almost like he was not encouraging these people to see him. Verse 22, Philip cometh and telleth Andrew. And the reason why they went that route, and Andrew again, and again Andrew and Philip tell Jesus. And notice, and Jesus answered them, saying, the hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. And what's he going to be glorified? He talks about his crucifixion. It's almost like he does the exact opposite. And the reason why the Lord does things like this is because he is checking out the sincerity of people. Okay, back in verse 20, cover a couple things that possibly missed there, or just not missed, but now we're going to look at them. There were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. Remember, under the Old Testament, the way a Gentile came to God was through the nation of Israel. When they can get to the nation of Israel or allow Israel to become their priest, then they would come to God in that fashion. Obviously, if they're someplace else in the planet, they can't get to Israel, God would judge them according to their conscience. Romans chapter 2. So, these are what are known to be Jewish proselytes, where they come to Jerusalem to worship, joining Judaism. Okay, and this was mentioned by Jesus in John 4, and also the woman at the well. This was like Philip of Acts chapter 8, where he has an Ethiopian eunuch who came to Jerusalem to worship. He became a Jewish proselyte. His race was black. His religion was Jewish. So a person can be a Jew racially or religiously. Okay, Philip was a Jew racially and religiously, but then Christianity came in play. So these Greeks are coming to Jerusalem, Gentiles, to worship according to Judaism. Then they are mentioned to Philip about seeing Jesus Christ. But remember, that Jewish mindset, they did not think too highly of Gentiles. Okay, if you would take food from a dog without getting bit, okay, you take food from a dog, it's not considered theft, you just take food from a dog. And that's exactly how a Jew feels towards you and I. You go to Israel, and if they don't give you the right change back, that's nothing to them. That's not sin. That's not a crime. Because we are dogs to them. We are Gentile dogs. So that's why they're coming to Philip and wondering what's going to happen. Sirs, we would see Jesus. And then Philip said, man, I better go talk to Andrew. And then he goes and tells Jesus, and then Jesus tells about his crucifixion. It's almost like they're trying to push people away. You know, I've heard people say, well, if you preach like that, you're going to push them away from the gospel. Okay, now granted, I understand people's personality or the way they do some things can grate some folks and they're not one going to hear it. But if a person wants to know the truth, they're going to get the truth. No matter about the personality. When I started reading some of Ruckman's stuff, I thought, whoo, man, this guy is out there. And you get one of his commentaries, it will be one-third scripture, one-third blasting somebody, one-third commentary. That's basically how I recognize his commentaries. But I still appreciate his knowledge that God has given him to the scriptures. People may not like his methods, but hey, the Lord has revealed to him things that he has not revealed to a lot of people. Okay, and so in verse 23, Jesus answered them saying, notice he did not say, oh, come here, I'm Jesus, come see hear me, and I'll save you, you know, and I'll heal your life, you know, and make everything fine and hunky-dory. No, he does the opposite. The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Okay, when a person says, okay, he's going to be glorified, the average mindset, okay, I'm going to be glorified. That means I'm going to be praised. I'm going to be honored. I'm going to get a, you know, some ribbon. I'm going to get some certificate. You know, people are going to ooh and ah, and they're going to gawk at me, and they're going to take my picture and all that stuff. I'm going to be glorified. Well, the glorification of Jesus Christ, verse 24, 25, 26, is his death. It's dying. And verse 24, he gives any common, ordinary illustration, if you know anything about planting a garden or putting a seed in the ground, he said, verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. Solomon wrote in chapter 7, Ecclesiastes, he says, better is the day of one's death than the day of one's birth. Again, that goes contrary to the average mindset of a person. Now, the Orientals seem to get that closer where, man, they'll die any, you know, just as long as they got honor, they'll die. Kamikaze, he died, and he thought that was dying with honor. Okay, so verse 24, except the corn of wheat. Now, you notice in the King James Bible, corn of wheat. We say kernel of wheat. Corn in the Bible is referring to grain, kernel. You can have a corn of wheat, or in this context, corn of wheat, or you can have a corn of corn. Okay, and we allow the Bible to define itself. Except the corn of wheat fall into the ground and die. Okay, each plant obviously is different. Okay, you know, whether you cover it with a quarter inch of, you know, of dirt, you know, or whether it's down an inch or whatever. But basically, when that seed takes in moisture, it's at a very critical time when if the moisture runs out before it can sprout, it will die. Okay, if the moisture, it takes in moisture and it's cold, the weather turns cold, it will rot. Okay, it can also, when it takes that moisture in, then a shoot comes out of the seed pointing north. I think that's north. Okay, pointing north, the magnetic north pointing towards heaven, and then comes up and goes and it's like a magnet grows toward the Van Allen belt, the magnetic belt around the Earth's surface. Grows up, and then the roots go down with gravity, okay, and then how many months later, whatnot, you get the fruit. So it's at a very critical time, though, when that plant, that seed, takes on a certain amount of moisture, and it dies to itself. Now, the seed that's in a grain bin right now, you got, you know, thousands and millions and billions of little kernels in there. That is seed that hasn't died to itself. It hasn't taken on moisture and hasn't been placed in the dirt. Okay, that seed will die unto itself, even though it's a bunch of seeds there. So he's shown us in life, and the illustration is going to be the illustration of life, is that except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone, but if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. Now here's the illustration. He that loveth his life shall lose it. And he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it in the life eternal. Now obviously the word hate doesn't mean, I hate myself, I'm going to get rid of myself. Hating his life is a matter of priorities, meaning you're trying to do a certain task in life, but then there are some interruptions in life that you need to give up your desires to serve the Lord or to help serve someone else. Often it's been said that the ministry is living a life by schedule with a bunch of interruptions. And that's true. Okay, and so like, trying to build a house, but I got to cut off early because on Wednesdays you got street preaching and or knocking on doors and a church on Wednesday night and the same on Thursday. Now that's giving up something to help to serve God. That's losing one's life in order to be a blessing to God. And in that process of losing one's life, giving up some of the desires or dreams that you would have in life, and do something for the Lord. Now, whether it's a full-time thing or part-time thing or whatever, everybody, I don't care who it is, even if they're, quote, full-time Christian service, they still have to deal with this life and provide a living for their family. Serving the Lord, verse 26, if a man serve me, let him follow me, and where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Okay, the amazing thing about that is that when you give up some of your own personal desires in life in order to serve the Lord, then God himself, the Father, at the judgment seat of Christ, will honor those efforts. Okay, now, depending on what kind of job a person has, whether you're in charge, you can call off when you want. So sometimes you got shift work, you really can't. Okay, sometimes you're a boss. Now, like Uncle Roy out there in Pennsylvania, he's got his own body shop. I tell you, that guy, when somebody come in and want to say anything about the Bible, of course, he had it written from this side of the garage all the way around and even on the garage door and everything. He would just can everything and preach at them for an hour. Just forget work. Okay? And, that's honoring to the Lord, if it's a good topic that you're preaching at him about. And so that would be something that the Lord would be pleased with. So if any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Now, of course, the different ways God honors. At the judgment seat of Christ, you have five crowns, possibly seven crowns being passed out. You also have the gold, silver, and precious stones, which I mentioned a week ago, Sunday, or so forth. And we've gone through a lot of those things. Plus you have like a wardrobe, plus you have furnishings, plus you have a house, and all those things. So him will my Father honor. That's something right there. Think about that for a while. Meditate on that. Verse 27, now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour, but for this cause came I unto this hour. Now, the idea of his soul being troubled, the Lord is not worried about the crucifixion. The Lord is not concerned about it. Okay, what he's troubled about is he's going to soon have a broken fellowship with his Father. Because Calvary was the Lord dying for God first to satisfy his holiness and justice. And you and I are just getting byproducts of that. And so the broken fellowship between he and the Father was the event that the Lord was concerned about. Verse 28, Father, glorify thy name. Then came there a voice from heaven saying, I have both glorified it and will glorify it again. The people, therefore, that stood by and heard it said that it thundered. Others said an angel spake to him. So they could not hear the audible words. Now, this also took place with the Apostle Paul when Saul, before he got saved, Saul had a voice speak from heaven. And he said, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? The people that were with them thought that it thundered. They didn't hear the audible words. They thought a big thunder clap, boom, is going to take place. Paul heard the actual words. And I would dare say that's what the rapture is going to be like. Where each believer is going to hear, come up hither. And the world is going to think somebody pushed the button. They think, uh-oh, an atom bomb, hydrogen bomb, something, nuclear warhead. And that's what they're going to think. But yet the believer is going to hear the words audibly, and the believer is going to go right to the presence of Jesus Christ. Revelation 4 and 5. After the world gets over the stunned effect of that noise, of that big thunder clap, probably run to the TV, check out their cell phone, find out what that was, who's starting a war, what's going on, and somebody's going to assure them, you know, that we have taken a quantum leap up. We know there's a lot of people missing. The being from outer space will flutter on down and step out with his peace symbol and say, God be with you. And we have gotten rid of a bad element. This element has been holding us up, and now we are able to take a quantum leap. Well, of course, we haven't had a missing link in the past, and none of us are going to have a missing link. We're just going to step up and become gods. Now, obviously, it's going to be a great sales pitch. It's going to be a good sales pitch where it's going to hoodwink the vast majority of the people, at least for a while. They're never going to hoodwink 100%. Never does. That's never going to happen. There's always going to be somebody that's going to figure it out somewhere along the line. Okay, but they're going to hoodwink a lot of them. And, but the world's going to think it's a thunder. Okay, verse 29, the people therefore that stood by heard it said that it thundered. Others said an angel spake to him. Jesus answered, said, this voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. Okay, being cast out from what? Being cast out from the second heaven to the first heaven. Okay, we got three heavens in the Bible, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Paul entered into the third heaven where the throne of God is. Satan, the arch, not angel, but a cherub, the anointed cherub, okay, where he is going to get fired in five installments. Being the fifth cherub, he goes down five times. The number five is a number for death in the Bible, where on the second day of creation, it appears that he was devolved. He devolved from Lucifer to Leviathan, going from the third heaven down to the second heaven. In the third heaven, as the anointed cherub, he led the choir up there, kicked out of that down to the second heaven, which would be our space area. And then Jesus said in Luke 10, I beheld Satan fall as lightning. So on the day of Calvary, he was kicked out of the second heaven, and his most of his fear of his influence today is in the first heaven, and he is a defeated foe. In the first heaven is what we call atmosphere. And Ephesians 2, verse 1, he is called the prince of the power of the air. So that's the first heaven. During the tribulation time period, he will have a battle with Michael and get kicked out of the first heaven, down to earth, where 1 Peter says that he's a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. At the end of the tribulation, he is booted out of earth, thrown into the bottomless pit when he actually gets fired. At the end of the millennium, he is pulled out of the bottomless pit, and then he gets one last Custer's last stand there, and he convinces a lot of people, as many as the sands of the sea, and then God will throw him into a lake of fire. Those are the steps down. Now here he's going to be judged. According to Colossians chapter 2, Jesus Christ makes a fool out of Satan. Now, I didn't say you and I'd make a fool out of Satan. I'm saying Jesus Christ made a fool out of him. Colossians chapter 2. Now, most of this battle between he and the Lord was behind the scenes. It was in the spirit world where it could not be seen. According to Isaiah chapter 50, Jesus was actually taunting Satan. And he was basically taunting him, saying, come in, give me your best shot, give me your best shot, that's the best you can do. And he was influencing the Roman soldiers as they was torturing his body. Isaiah 50, verse 5 through 9. Colossians chapter 2, verse 15, it says, you can see the context, verse 14, blotting out the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, which was contrary to us, and took it out of the way, nailing it to his cross, and having spoiled principalities and powers, he made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in it. Triumphing over Satan in the victory that took place at Calvary. This is a judgment of the world. This is a judgment of the prince of this world. And he is a defeated foe. And all you and I have to do is, you know, mention the name Jesus Christ, his shed blood, or just ask the Lord himself to take care of the mess. So John 12:31, now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men, okay, all men unto me. Now this signifies that his death is going to be a death of crucifixion, where he will be placed on a cross. As Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up, John chapter 3. Okay, if we just spend some time and think about the cross, and think about what Jesus Christ did. Now he's lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me. And salvation is only found in Jesus Christ. The sad thing is that the vast majority of men don't come to him. But they have to come to Jesus Christ. Okay, chapter 12, verse 33. This he said, signifying what death he should die, crucifixion. The people answered him, we have heard out of the law that Christ abideth forever. And how sayest thou the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is the Son of Man? Okay, now we're having a contrast between the human nature and the nature of God. Jesus Christ, God. Jesus Christ, man. Jesus Christ, God, never was born. The Gospel of John does not record his birth. He's showing Jesus Christ is God. Matthew shows Jesus Christ is a king of the Jews. It records his birth of royalty. Luke records Jesus Christ as a Son of Man. It records his human lineage, his mother's lineage of his birth. Mark just covers his ministry, so there's no birth mentioned there. John records that Jesus Christ never has been born because he's God. But yet, as a man, he was born. As a man, he will die. As God, he will live forever. So those two natures of Jesus is what's it's got the cultists all confused, JWs, Mormons, and so forth. Okay, and that's just the two natures of Jesus Christ. Verse 35. Then Jesus said unto them, yet a little while is the light with you. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness come upon you. For he that walketh in darkness knoweth not whither he goeth. Now, one of the arguments about the tribulation time period is that if people hear the gospel of Jesus Christ before the rapture, Can they get saved afterwards? Now, usually the verse that's used for that is 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 9 and 10. And that really says nothing about rejection or acceptance of the gospel. But, logically speaking, if a person is going to reject the gospel of Jesus Christ when it is by grace through faith, as simple as it is today, versus the tribulation time period when it will be, yes, by grace, but you got to work or die in order to keep it, there's a fat chance that they're not going to accept it then. If a man is not going to accept the gospel for the simple method of today, the chance of him accepting it during a time where it's going to take his life is slim and none. And so a person who hears the gospel, now is the time. They say, well, I'll just take my chances. Well, you'll get hoodwinked by the Antichrist. Because a blindness will come over, and that a person will easily be hoodwinked and something like that. When they're not going to accept the free gospel of Jesus Christ now, there ain't much of a chance. Now, this is probably one of the problems of the Left Behind series, is that they are giving Christians, or not Christians, but people who want to put it off, a false sense of hope, where their gospel presentation in the Left Behind series and Kirk Cameron is very watered down. And his movies that he publishes, you know, granted it's better than anything else going on, but yet it's pretty watered down. And they do not make a distinction between the church time period where salvation is by grace through faith and the 70th week where it reverts back to Old Testament salvation. And this is one of the issues of the tribulation, that people who foolishly believe that the church is going to the tribulation, they never come up with the idea or discover the idea that salvation reverts back to Old Testament. So Jesus is saying, walk while you have the light. And that's obviously a good advice. Verse 36, while you have light, believe in the light. While you got a Bible, believe in a Bible. While you got a Bible-believing church, believe in what the Bible-believing church is preaching. But human nature goes, when you got it, you take it for granted. When you leave, then you realize what you had. And that's just how things go. While you have light, believe in the light, that you may be the children of light. These things spake Jesus, and departed, and did hide himself from them. Now that is the completion of the conversation about the Greeks in verse 20. When the Greeks came to Philip, the Gentiles came to Philip and said, we want to see Jesus. And what does Jesus do? He tells them about his death. Tells them about all the negative things that's going to take place. If you want to see Jesus, okay, here we go. If you want to see God, here we go. It's all the negative stuff. It's like in Matthew chapter 15, when that woman of Canaan came to Jesus, and she had a daughter that was grievously vexed with the devil. And she asked, you know, she was crying out to Jesus to heal her kid, her child, her daughter. The Lord ignored her. And then the disciples tried getting rid of her. And then she wouldn't back off. She kept coming back for more. And then Jesus insulted her. And then, after his insult, she accepted the insult, and then got her answer to prayer. Now, I'm not saying those are good soul-winning techniques. You know? Somebody comes up to you and says, I want to hear about Jesus Christ. Oh, go take a flying leap. I'm not saying that's how it works. Okay? But there are times that the Lord will, shall we say, give us a cold shoulder to see how serious we are. And there are times where the Lord will test us. or test somebody to see if they're going to follow him. I believe a lot of times what preachers do, because they want to, you know, get a big notch in their gun or a notch on their belt, probably belt, most preachers don't want to have guns, a big notch in their belt so when they go back to their alma mater, their school that they graduate, oh, I know so many kids came back to school. You know, I encouraged all of them to come back to school. And you see so many kids drop out because they're not told what the ministry is really like. All they're given is great big miraculous stories of how many people, you know, have come and all the positive aspects. And if a person is not told the truth about these things, it's easy to get disenchanted. Especially if you get stuck in a little podunk town where all the attendance gimmicks works in big cities, but that don't last real long in small towns. And the thing is we're not here to build quantity. We're here to develop quality, to please the Lord. So, at the end of verse 36, these things spake Jesus and departed and did hide himself from them. You see, I've been one to be more laid back about things, laid back about things of the church. You know, if somebody tells me, I got a few issues, and I'm just going to go find someplace else, you know, to go to church. Oh, okay. Scout it out. Go look. And then if you don't call him after 2 months, they don't love us. Well, you told me he's going to go scout it out. What do you want? Do you want me to interfere? Do you want me to beg you? What do you want me to do? You know, you got a God, I got a God. And if God leads you here, God leads you here. If he don't, what am I going to do about it? You see? And the thing is, Americans are so thin-skinned. Well, you didn't come visit me. You didn't come visit us. You know, we didn't leave. The door's still open. You say, well, where's concern? The concern has been praying for you. You know, I'd rather somebody pray for me in secret than to pat me on the back and not pray for me. I'd want them praying for me. And so there are times where you just got to back off and let God work. God can do a lot better job than we can. And so Jesus, notice that, isn't that strange? Did hide himself from them. He backed off. And that will probably be one area where you really get, you know, follow the Lord's leading, but that's probably the area that you get criticized more than anything. That's how the Lord did it. Being Christ-like. And sometimes you figure out if you did it right or you did it wrong. Now, verse 37 down to 41 gets into two verses of Isaiah that are probably quoted more than any verse in the New Testament. And it's very sad verses. They're very negative verses. Okay, so verse 37, but though he had done so many miracles before them, yet they believed not on him, that the saying of Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled, which he spake. Lord, who hath believed our report, and to whom hath the arm of the Lord been revealed? Therefore they could not believe, because Isaiah said again. Now this is a verse. This verse is quoted more than any verse in the New Testament that I know of. This is Isaiah 6, verse 9 and 10. Okay, and you'll find that I think each of the Gospels has this quotation. Acts has this quotation in Acts 28. And Romans has this quotation, Romans 11. And it says this, He hath blinded their eyes and hardened their heart, that they should not see with their eyes, nor understand with their heart, and be converted, and I should heal them. These things said Isaiah when he saw his glory and spake of him. Now that verse has got something we'll have to come back to. Now the idea of verse 40 is, that the Lord showers people with the truth. He gives them the truth. He gives them the truth. And when they reject it, He gives them so much truth to the point where they reject the truth. And that's what in the book of Acts closes with. And that is a fair warning to Gentiles in Romans chapter 11. God will flood the truth to people and keep flooding the truth to them until the point where they get so hardened to the truth they don't want to hear it. And the sad thing is, that's about where America's at. That's about where the American churches are at. They don't want to hear it. They want to say like the prophet in the old, don't speak unto me right things, preach unto me smooth things. 2 Timothy writes it, there'll come a time where they will not endure sound doctrine, will heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. And boy, if that's not this time period, I don't know what is. Okay, we'll stop there. We'll come back to verse 41. Lord, thank you for your words. And Lord, I do pray you'd help us to be people that are hungry for the truth of God, hungry for the words of God, and to be faithful to the words of God. Honor your words. In Jesus' name, amen.